everybody to this episode of the Raven Cast. The Raven Cast is a product of the Raven Review, an online magazine where we explore mimetic theory and the violence and conflict and rivalries that so often infect our lives and our world. And we try to come up, Suzanne, how about this? We try to come up with peaceful solutions and understanding what is underneath all of the conflict that is causing us so many problems in the world. That's pretty good.
That's a pretty good way to say it, Adam.
Yeah.
You've been thinking about this a lot, haven't you?
Yeah, it was about 10 years. Yeah.
Yeah, you know, whatever.
Yeah, it's okay. It comes. So Jesus Christ Superstar, you saw it on Sunday. I've been watching it the last couple of days. And one of the things that I love about this show, Suzanne, is the response that it is getting from the left and the right. So people on each side of the spectrum, a lot of people hate it. And people on the right hate it because of its portrayal of Judas, right? So right. The fact that this is seen through the lens, through the eyes of Judas, is already something that we don't like, because it ignores Jesus, or it puts Jesus in the background. And if Jesus isn't in the foreground, then it's heretical and we shouldn't be watching it. The reason that people on the left don't like it is because of its portrayal of Mary. A lot of people on the left are saying, oh, this is just this missing Mary, and it's going through Christian tradition and not going to the Gospels to really understand what Mary was about.
Yeah.
So I think that if you are
Mary Magdalene, right?
This is it. Yes. This is part of it. But I think that if you are a production and you're pissing off people from the left and the right, you're doing something right.
Well, yeah. I mean, these critiques go back to when the show first came out in the early
70s.
So it's really nothing new. What I really think has happened along the way since 1970, 71, is that we've started reading the Gospels and the Bible in general very differently, thanks, in large part to mimetic theory, where we're actually looking for the human revelation in the biblical text. You know, we're used to reading the Bible to find out what does this tell us about what God wants for us and so forth. But there's so much wisdom in the Bible about just how humans behave and what it means to be a human being that mimetic theory has really brought into the forefront. And I, because this show specifically wants to view the gospel narrative through the eyes of a human being, a flawed human being like Judas, we can really get into some really good mimetic analysis and good conversations about it. I mean, I thought the production, this particular production, was a brilliant reimagining of the show, especially for two reasons. One, the way it used the audience. They talk about mimetic elements present. I mean, they used the audience. They were sort of unwitting members of the crowd, you know, the way they reacted to celebrity and were cheering. It was Palm Sunday. You know, they were reenacting Palm Sunday without probably realizing it. And also because of the multicultural aspect of the cast, I mean, the whole crowd, I mean, all of the extras, everything was in reimagined and envisioned through this multicultural, multiracial lens. And I just found it made the gospel messages and analysis of human behavior just really pop, because it made it so relevant for, you know, what's going on today with Black Lives Matter and social justice movements. And, you know, it just was like, yes, we're seeing this story through our contemporary lens, which makes it come alive.
And it's also pretty clear that Jesus was working for social justice. They have that temple scene that's above the cross, I think it's at the moment. And so the cross is like the foundation of the temple, and Jesus comes in and he's like, you have turned my house, the God's house, into a den of thieves, right? This is about social justice. That's what the Gospels are about. And that makes a lot of people uncomfortable, a lot of Christians uncomfortable, because we want to keep Christianity into a personal spiritual ethic that doesn't have much to do with the broader world, but is about just personal transformation, not about transformation of systems, corrupt and unjust systems, but just personal.
Well, yeah, let's look at the politics of it, because I wanted to ask you about the portrayal of the last days of Jesus and the political authorities, from the high priest to Pilate to Herod. To what was the, is the show true to the gospel description of what got Jesus killed?
Oh man, this is a great question. It's one of the questions that kind of haunts the whole play and also haunts Christian history along with it. Mm. So a lot of the critiques of the Gospel of John, which the movie is apparently based on, is kind of is a portrayal that the Jews are the problem. The Jews are the ones who don't like Jesus. And so this has led to anti-Semitism, anti-Judaism throughout Christian history. But there's a lot of modern scholarship that says that when John is talking about the Jews, he uses a specific word that talks about the temple elite. It talks about those who are in power, those who are in control. So there's a lot of scholarship, and there is some competing scholarship on this too. I want to be honest about that. But there's a lot of modern scholarship that says when John is referring to the Jews, he's specifically referring to the chief priests, the council that you see throughout the movie, or the play, sorry. That's what John is talking about. It's the Jews who are in power. It's not so much the common Jew who's out there on the street. But there's also an element in it that we get from, surprise, surprise, René Girard, who says that it's easy for the crowd to get caught up in violence, to get caught up in uniting against a common enemy. And that may be also be what's happening here, is that there Rome is the big empire that's on the block and controlling everything. And you see this in the beginning with Judas in the story, where Judas just wants peace. Mm-hmm. Judas in Jesus Christ Superstar here in NBC says, why are you doing all of this? Don't you know that we have an oppressor and all we want is peace? And if we keep doing this, they're going to come and they're going to kill us. And Judas is right. I mean, this is the political situation that Jesus is dealing with. But Jesus also says, and this is one of the things that's really great about Jesus in this story, is he's also very honest about the way to life may end up having you go through death. So when you go up and you work for social justice, our modern term, when you work for that, the powers and the principalities are going to come up against you, and you're likely going to get killed. But this portrayal in particular on NBC says that death doesn't have the last word. You know, it says that there is a resurrection at the end. And you see that in NBC's portrayal when the camera like goes into the light after the crucifixion, and there's more light to enter the world after death. And that's one of the things that I think came through really, really beautifully in this portrayal.
Yeah, it was very powerful at the end because, the show, you know, was written to end at the crucifixion. But as you say, the staging takes it through the weekend to Easter. And, you know, as you're discussing Judas and his conflict within about how do I best serve Jesus and how do I best serve the mission, and he gets caught up, you know, in the powers and the politics of it, and I couldn't help but think about, you know, we're commemorating the unfortunate anniversary of Martin Luther King's assassination 50 years ago, and boy, when you're watching the show and looking at a multiracial cast facing the powers and challenging the military complex of Rome, you can't help but think of the fate that King faced doing the same thing.
Yeah. King and Jesus both have this ethic of nonviolence. Gonna enter, it's not a passive nonviolence. That's where people misunderstand what nonviolence is about. They enter into the violence of the world in order to show us a different way. And King also was about justice, was about transforming not just our personal lives, but our political lives. If the gospel doesn't change everything, then we're missing the point. You know, if it doesn't change everything about ourselves and the way that politics is just about how we live with one another, if it doesn't change that at a fundamental level, or if we're not working towards that at a fundamental level, then we're missing the point. And that's what King was leading us towards. It's what Gandhi was leading us towards, without mirroring the violence that's all around us, but working towards a more just world for all, which means saying no to, as you say, the military-industrial complex, to use an anachronistic term, in the first century. Yeah. But that's essentially what Jesus was doing. Put your sword back in its place. In the play, Jesus says to some people in the crowd, why are you obsessed with fighting? There's this undercurrent in certain places of, oh, we're going to go get him. Jesus says, no, why are you obsessed with fighting? Stop it. You know, he has this point where he says to Israel this stuff about, like, not knowing the ways to peace.
Yeah.
You know, that's in there too. What is the way to peace that we all think it is? It's destroying our enemies. You know, right. And Jesus says, no, it's to love your enemies. It's this wisdom that flips things upside down.
Right. No, I thought the show did a great job portraying the risks. And also how difficult it is to, when you're in the midst of it, to know what's the right path to take. And that Christian history has demonized Judas. But, you know, he's asking, you know, at one point in the show, he asked Jesus, you know, isn't this what you want me to do? Betray you. And Jesus says, go do what you have to do. And the question, you know, comes up about, in the garden also, in the show, Jesus says something that, you know, he says, this is the God's cup that I need to drink from. And so there's this big question of, was this God's plan that Jesus died? And if so, then isn't Judas a hero? Didn't he help God's plan come about? You know, how do we think about that now theologically?
It's a good question. There's the Gospel of Judas, which portrays Judas as a hero, I think. It's been a while since I've read it. But so it has a very different view of Judas in there, where Judas is fulfilling Jesus's wishes. Jesus knows he has to die, so he's wanting to bring it forward or have it come to him. So that's one portrayal of Judas. But, you know, I mean, the Gospels portray Judas as not doing the right thing.
Right.
You know, I think especially the Gospel of John, it's not a good thing to betray Jesus, to turn Jesus in. But, you know, the way that I think about it is, you know, on Maundy Thursday, when Jesus is having his meal with his disciples, he says, the one who betrays me. Well, they all betray him, you know, they all abandon him. And that's so clearly seen in this play is Peter denies him three times. You know, all the disciples flee, except for the women. You know, what's that about, you know? Which is what I love about Mary, you know? Mary Magdalene is the one who stays there through the crucifixion and is there during the resurrection too. But Judas, I think, gets a bad rap. I think he gets scapegoated in Christian history because they all do it. And the reason that it's again, why does it portray that they all abandon Jesus is because it's what I would do too, mm-hmm. right? Like, I'm one of the disciples. When push comes to shove, I'm probably running in the other direction because I'm afraid of death, mm-hmm. you know? In the play, Jesus says, the way to life is to go through death. And that's something that's so counter to the wisdom of the world, to the way that I'm structured, you know, mm-hmm. but you don't have to fear death.
Right. And, you know, Judas is really a tragic figure in the Gospels, especially, you know, that he commits suicide. And they, you know, show that in the play. And it's a very poignant moment because we're made to empathize with Judas, mm-hmm. which is always good to do that. But even this play that is so focused on telling the human story falls back into this blaming God for Jesus' death.
I want to bring up a point from our friend and colleague Lindsay. I feel like Judas is the ultimate scapegoat, and this show makes it so clear. He's not innocent, but he is a scapegoat. And moving to your comment about how God is in the, I don't even know if it's fair to say God's in the background of this play. There's very few references to God in this play, except for in the garden, as you say, Suzanne. And Lindsay sent me a message earlier today saying that in the original play from the 1970s, it has different wording than from today. So it's very ambiguous back there. But in this one, it says that Jesus is talking about the cup of poison, God's poison cup, mm-hmm. right? And it says in this version, destroy your only son. So the violence in this version, when it does talk about God, is about God destroying Jesus. And that's not in any of the Gospels. That's not how the Gospels portray this. There is, in the Garden of Gethsemane in the Gospels, Jesus praying cup would pass from him. But it doesn't even say it's God's cup. You know, Girard helps us understand that whose cup is this? That's the question. And it's the human cup of wrath. It's not God's cup. You know, it's the chief priests who kill Jesus. It's Pilate is another big question in Jesus Christ Superstar, the role of Pilate. Pilate's in on this. It's all humans that are in on this. Mm-hmm. God's will is much more seen in, as we've been talking about, non-violent justice. And what happens when you live in a world of violence and you come into it with non-violent justice, the powers that be are going to put you up on a cross.
Yeah, clearly. You know, and Martin Luther King was following Jesus, as you say, in non-violence, and quite aware that he was putting his own life at risk as well as Jesus put his life at risk. And I think that one of the things that has been personally important for me about mimetic theory is the way it helps me understand God's nonviolence, and that what God wanted Jesus to do was to occupy this place of the victim of violence, to show us how mistaken we are about the people we put in that place, about the people we, you know, decide aren't worthy of life or being part of our community, and that God is with them, not with those who are persecuting and expelling and destroying. And, you know, just my goodness, I always had that question growing up, you know, in the Catholic Church and trying to understand the passion narratives, and just had a hard time believing that God would need to kill his son in order to forgive humanity. I mean, can't God just do it?
Well, that's the thing, is that Jesus was doing it throughout his ministry. He was freely forgiving people before the cross. So it's not the cross that all of a sudden, oh, now God can forgive, because Jesus has been doing it the whole time. The cross is about something else. I think it's about how we can do the very worst thing to the Son of God, and God will respond with an act of forgiveness. Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. That's how nonviolent God is. That's how God is not at all caught up in our reciprocities of violence back and forth. Jesus had to go to the cross in order to reveal God's fundamental nonviolence.
Right.
That's because we're so stuck on violence. Lindsay says this in a comment, that the original song, the original from the 1970, in the song in the Garden of Gethsemane says, God, thy will is hard, but you hold every card. So that's ambiguous, you know. In this version, it's, God, thy will be done, destroy your only son.
Ooh. Woo. Yeah, no, that, no.
So this is one of the really problematic things. There's a few things, there are a lot of things that are problematic about this Jesus Christ Superstar. But this is one of them, is this portrayal of God in the Garden of Gethsemane. That's a total fictional liberty that's not in the Gospels.
Right. Well, and I wanted to touch on the other fiction in the show that you mentioned at the beginning that always gets a lot of pushback, is the relationship between Mary Magdalene and Christ, and also the portrayal of her as a prostitute. Can you talk about what the Gospels say about Mary Magdalene and Jesus?
Well, it's tough because it's very confusing. And so I have a little sympathy for Christian history on confusing the three Marys. There's Mary, the mother of Jesus, right? And she's pretty, not very confusing. But there's Mary of Bethany, and there's Mary Magdalene.
Yeah.
And Mary of Bethany and Mary Magdalene and all of the other, many of the other women who don't get named often get, all of these women get conflated into one person, Mary Magdalene. So the idea that Mary was a prostitute is not in the Gospels.
Mm-hmm.
That's a fictional liberty that Christian history comes to pretty early on, actually, and that Jesus Christ Superstar picks up. Not even the Gospel of John says that Mary was a prostitute. When Jesus stands with the prostitute and the religious authorities are about to stone this woman,
yeah,
it doesn't say that it's Mary.
Right.
You know, all that we know about Mary from the Gospels is that Jesus healed her from demons,
mm-hmm,
and that she followed Jesus, that she supported him financially somehow, and that she followed him to the cross and was the first person that Jesus came to in the resurrection. And she said, hey, Mary, go preach the resurrection to the men.
Yeah. Well,
you know? So.
And it sort of creates a scandal, too. The show did initially with this, and other portrayals of Jesus have picked up on this and suggested that there was a sexual relationship between Mary Magdalene and Jesus. And again, there's no evidence for that in the Gospels. It's pure conjecture. But how would you feel, Adam, if suddenly, you know, some new document was discovered, you know, Mary's diary of their first date or something, you know? How would you feel if Jesus had a sexual relationship with Mary Magdalene?
I don't know. I'd have to think that through some more. I think that it would cause me to doubt the Gospels a little more. I don't think the Gospels are perfect in its portrayal of Jesus, but I think that would be a pretty big omission from the Gospel writers if they did have a sexual relationship, or if they were married and had kids, like Dan Brown wants us to believe, right? I think that would be a huge omission and would lead me to trust the Gospels a little less about Jesus's life. But at the moment, it's just conjecture. You know, I mean, there are people like Dan Brown who want us to think that Jesus and Mary had this sexual relationship. Whatever. It ultimately doesn't bother me all that much that they think that. I guess another reason that I think is so important about Jesus, I'd have to think this through more, is that he was clear about his mission.
Mm.
And I think he was clear that his mission did not include a sexual relationship with Mary or another woman. Not that that's bad. Not that that would be bad. It just wasn't what his mission was. His mission right. was to, in some way, show the love of God. And the Gospels are kind of clear that he knows early on in his ministry that this is going to lead him to the cross, not because it's God's will, again, but because it's what humans will end up doing to him. And right. whether he decided that it would cause Mary too much pain to have a relationship with her and he'd be gone in 2 years or whatever, that could be, I don't know. But I just don't think he thought his mission was to be a married man.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and Mary Gay McKinney is saying, if Jesus' sexuality is left without comment, then he can be everyone's Jesus, perhaps. There is a certain way, about ambiguity being a good thing. But I think you're right. I mean, certainly, it's very interesting, again, to look at these resonances with Martin Luther King trying to follow in Jesus' footsteps and the way his sexual life, his having an affair, was used against him to try and undermine him. You know, the FBI was, you know, J. Edgar Hoover was kind of obsessed with King. And I think because King had such a large following and he had so much credibility with the people who followed him, very much what annoyed the religious authorities in Jesus' time. Jesus had a huge following and a huge amount of credibility with his following. And so therefore very hard to control.
Yep.
And I think, you know, what this has to do with Jesus and Mary Magdalene, I don't know, but it's just interesting the way in which the powers that be will use whatever, will use anything to try and undermine mm-hmm. you if you're threatening their hold on power, you know? And in fact, the authorities accused Jesus in his day of being a glutton and of hanging out with prostitutes and sinners and so forth. So he got, you know, they tried to slam him with that. But of course, that just it created more love for him among the people who were following.
There's another element in this where people are scandalized by the portrayal of Jesus maybe being attracted to a woman in the Jesus Christ Superstar, right? And I think that the people who are doing that are think that they are Orthodox faithful Christians, and I'm not going to take that away from them. Sure that they may be, but it reminds me of a very early Christian heresy called Docetism, which thought that Jesus was just not a human, that he was a hologram and didn't have similar human impulses as we do. And so they'll take away Jesus's sexuality, the human basic human functions that we need. They would deny that Jesus had, because he was fully divine and not a whole lot of human.
Right.
And so he didn't suffer. He didn't have to go to the bathroom like humans do. He didn't have sexual impulses like humans do. And Christian tradition, orthodoxy, what I like about orthodoxy says, no, Jesus was fully human. He did all of the things that we did. He had sexual impulses that he had to learn to manage, as we all hopefully do. So I think the whole idea of being scandalized that Jesus may have been attracted to a woman or a man or whatever, whomever, is missing the point.
Yeah. The thing, you know, I was in high school when the show first came out, and, you know, I was addicted to the cast album and just couldn't stop playing it. And the thing that that appealed to me about Mary Magdalene in the show was how much she wants to comfort Jesus. And she wants to help him get a good night's sleep, you know? And it appealed to me in my relationship with Jesus at that point, of becoming aware of the fact, you know, Jesus gave so much for us. And what can we do for him? And to me, the portrayal of Mary Magdalene is asking that question, you know, What can we do? What in our lives gives comfort to Christ, and what keeps him up at night? You know, and so that just was so personal and human. And as a teenager, it helped me really connect to have this very palpable, real connection to the Jesus and the Gospels, not in a sexual way. I mean, certainly I was a teenager dealing with sexual urges, but it wasn't about that. It was about love. It was actually about showing care and concern for someone that loved you so much that they gave their life for you.
Yeah. And Mary in Jesus Christ Superstar has that great song where she says, "How do I love this man?" You know, she confesses that she's in love with him and would like to have a relationship with him, but she's also has this internal struggle of how to do that best. So comforting him and stuff. So
Judas echoes that line too when he says, "I don't know how to love him." And so they're both from both sides, from the personal and the political, you know, trying to figure out, how do I serve this man? How do I serve this person best? And I think, was it Goldie that just asked a question about Pilate's dream?
Yeah, we've got, Mary's got a comment here, and then Goldie, and then Lindsay, and then maybe we should wrap it up after that. But
okay.
I'll bring up them all. So Mary says that she talks about the Theology and Peace Conference, which is coming up in May, a fantastic conference that if people can go to, and I would highly recommend it.
We will both.
Yeah, it's going to be a big, awesome party. So she says that at a recent conference, Julia Robinson and Kelly Brown Douglas talked about the purity codes that have been used by whites to undermine African-Americans, LGBTQ folks, and also women in general. Women are to be pure. Dr. King is to be pure. But white males in general are not held to that standard.
Yes. Excellent point. Excellent point.
Yes. Thank you. Yes. So Goldie says, Pilate's wife had a dream about Jesus. All other dreams in Jesus's life were meant to protect him. It's a curious detail. Pilate's uncertainty and curiosity versus religious certainty about how and who God is. So, and I think in Jesus Christ Superstar, they switch it a little bit so that it's Pilate who has the dream. He doesn't say it's from his wife, but it's Pilate. But in the Gospels, Goldie is absolutely right. It's Pilate's wife who has a dream. And I'm seeing this connection with Mary and women in the Gospel who are about comforting Jesus, protecting Jesus. Even this woman who doesn't know him has a dream about protecting him. That's interesting.
Yeah. It's particularly a dream that he's innocent, which again is the undermining of the scapegoating mentality that just, you know, whoever I decide I can put on the cross is guilty. And so we justify our violence that way. And Jesus' insistence on his innocence and the gospel's insistence on his innocence, even the wife of Pilate is insisting he's innocent. And then the centurion, after the death says, surely this man was innocent. So there's all these proclamations which undermine the violence justification that we go through.
Yeah, and I'm so glad Goldie brought up this point, because Pilate is also in the Gospel of John and in Jesus Christ Superstar is portrayed sympathetically. And so that's another thing that people don't like about these two portrayals of the Gospels, is that Pilate is seen as the good guy, whereas the Jews are seen as the bad guy. But in the Gospel of John and in Jesus Christ Superstar, Pilate is seen as washing his hands from the guilt. So, and that act of washing the hands is not a good thing. It's not an admirable quality that he does. It shows that he knows that he is guilty of this, and he's trying to cleanse himself from the guilt, but he can't. He's horrified by it. You know,
right.
He can't get away as much as he tries to wash his hands from violent act. He can't.
Mm-hmm. No, he can't. And it's a very political act. He doesn't really, it's almost like he doesn't mind killing this guy as long as it doesn't bounce back and hurt him politically.
But I think that the Gospels in this play portray him as conflicted.
Yeah.
And what does he do with that inner conflict in him? He tries to wash it off. Lindsay says, what do you make of the iconic song, I Don't Know How to Love Him, on a cross, the same cross that had the temple and the lepers seen? We talked a little bit about that song, but it was really a poignant part of it, of the play. Did you make anything of it?
Part of that scene hit me really hard, and it was the way the staging worked really well too, was that people were wanting even the people he was healing were like takers. They were all taking from Jesus. What can you do for me? And Mary is singing, how can I do something for you? And so it was very interesting how the show asked this question about how are we taking advantage of Jesus, you know, and his willingness to sacrifice everything for us. I mean, it's an interesting question theologically to be asking.
Yeah, and I want to bring up the end again, where the camera just pans into the light after the crucifixion. You know, the original Gospel of Mark kind of ends at the crucifixion, right. And you don't know what happens next. And it kind of reminded me of that, but here you have the light that continues to shine even after death, the resurrection of the light. And how do we continue to give Jesus comfort, as you're saying, is one of the big questions of this movie. And I'm reminded of, I think it was Teresa of Avila, the great mystic, who said that Jesus has no hands today but yours, has no feet today but yours, has no body today but yours. And Jesus identifies with those who are on the margins most especially. Matthew 25, where do you find Jesus? Those who are hungry and thirsty and without shelter and in prison, those who are on the margins of society. So how do you give comfort and protect Jesus today? Jesus is resurrected in those, in us, and especially in those on the margins. So how do you give comfort to Jesus? That's where you go.
Right.
That's where you find that's where you find follow Jesus and making the world a different place, more just place, is challenging the oppressive systems and also going out to those who are on the margins, because that's where Jesus is.
Right. Absolutely.
So those are my thoughts on Jesus Christ Superstar. And any other final thoughts, Suzanne?
No, I simply that Martin Luther King's activism was rooted in his faith. And I think that it's a good time to be reminded that our faith, if our activism is separated from our faith, it can become easily flip over into reverse scapegoating and demonizing others and feeling self-righteous, where the Gospels definitely don't let us get away with that kind of ego trip. I think the show coming out at the time that it did around remembering Martin Luther King, just a call to all of us to keep our activism rooted in a faith that's humbled by the crowd that we, as you say, could easily have been part of.
Yeah, absolutely. So thank you, Suzanne, and thank you everyone for watching. Thank you for your comments. Thank you, Goldie and Mary and Lindsay. This was a lot of fun. And next week, I just want to mention that Lindsay and I will be doing our second video on Tony Bartlett's book. I have it right here, Seven Stories. So it's
nice. Yeah,
always. But Seven Stories: How to Study and Teach the Nonviolent Bible. And the chapter we're going to be focusing on next week is chapter 2, from Violence to Forgiveness. So we'll be doing that Monday at 10 o'clock Central on Any Meeting, which is another free video broadcasting thing that you can join us on. We'll have the link to that tomorrow up on the Raven Foundation Facebook page, so you can keep up to date on all Ravencast episodes and all things Raven Review at the Raven Foundation Facebook page and at ravenfoundation.org. So until next time, everyone, grace and peace be with you. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.